Welcome to Wireless Water Cooler, a special Tower Talk segment. Join Inside Tower's managing editor, Jim Fryer, and Wireless Infrastructure Association president and CEO, Patrick Halley, for some good old water cooler conversation about what's happening in the wireless infrastructure world. And here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Wireless Water Cooler. I am Jim Fryer, managing editor of Inside Towers, and we have a very special guest today, U.S. Congressman Buddy Carter. Following a decade in Georgia's state legislature, Representative Carter was first elected to the House in 2014. In Congress, he has been a leading member of the Energy and Commerce Committee, particularly on cutting red tape to improve broadband deployment. One such effort is the American Broadband Deployment Act. Welcome, Congressman.
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, it's an honor to be with you.
Thank you so much. I am, of course, here co-hosting with Patrick Halley, who is the CEO and president of WIA. And Patrick, did you have anything to add to that introduction of the congressman?
Well, it's great to be with you, Jim, as always. And Congressman Carter, thank you so much for your time and, more importantly, for your leadership. We at WIA really do appreciate the focus and energy you're bringing to not just broadband and the importance of broadband, but also getting into the nitty-gritty on things we can do to actually accelerate the deployment of broadband so it gets out to more people faster. We really do appreciate your leadership.
Thank you.
Congressman, now that you're chair of the Environment, Manufacturing, Critical Materials Subcommittee, and you're formerly the vice chair of the Communications and Technology Subcommittee, as somebody who started out as a pharmacist in the pharmacy business, how did you get there? Did you acquire a lot of that technological background as while you were in Congress?
Well, I acquired quite a bit of it while I was in Congress, but I have the honor and privilege of representing the 1st Congressional District of Georgia, which encompasses the entire coast of Georgia, over 100 miles of pristine coastline, two major seaports, the Port of Savannah and the number 3 container port in the country, the Port of Brunswick, the number 2 roll-on, roll-off port in the country. And, strong military presence, strong ag presence, strong forestry presence, just a great district. But perhaps most importantly is it's my home. It's where I've lived all my life and where I intend to live the rest of my life. And I do get questions like you just asked quite often. How did you get started in this? Well, truthfully, I've lived the American dream, and I mean that truthfully. My grandfather was a sharecropper. He didn't own the land. He worked the land. I can remember my father taking me down a dirt road where he grew up, telling me, we used to live here, we used to live here, we used to live here. And it was wherever the land is that they worked, that's where they lived. They lived on the land. And my father came to the city, left the country, came to the city. I got a job at the paper mill at Union Bag. And he told me when he got that job, he said, I took every penny I had in my pocket and I put gas in my car and I just drove around with the windows down, just hollering, I got a job at Union Bag. I got a job at Union Bag. He was just so proud to have a job and make a steady income. And I was the first one in my family to go to college and to graduate from college and my extended family. And I was able to, it's funny because when I left home, it just so happened to be the day that I turned 18. It wasn't like, oh, I'm 18, I'm out of here. It just so happened to be that day. And I swore up and down I'd never come back. Well, the first thing I did when I graduated from college was come straight back home. And that 5 years I was going to get my pharmacy degree, my dad became the smartest guy I'd ever known. I was able to work for someone for a while and then open my own business, which was my dream. And after I opened my own business, I knew I needed to get involved. So I volunteered and I served on the Planning and Zoning Committee. And then I ran for city council, and then I ran for mayor, then I ran for state rep, then I ran for state senate, then I ran for Congress. And the rest, they say, is history. And, I do get asked quite often, how did you become so environmentally informed, and what was your interest in the environment? Well, quite honestly, when you represent the entire coast of Georgia, the environment's important. It's important to my constituents, and therefore it's important to me. And that's why I became very involved in that. As far as technology and communications and technology, as a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee. Of course, the Energy and Commerce Committee, as you know, is the oldest and most diverse committee in Congress. We cover everything: energy, commerce, healthcare, telecommunications, environment. Well, I was named vice chair of the telecommunications and the telecommunications subcommittee, and because of that, I all of a sudden I needed to learn, and I love learning new stuff, and I did, and I learned. It was kind of baptism under fire, if you will, but learned a lot, and became very interested in that and what we're trying to do. And of course, as we all know, it's extremely important, especially today, and trying to get broadband and how important it is, and trying to make sure that access to broadband and high-speed internet is available to everyone, particularly those in the rural areas, because as we like to say in the state of Georgia, there are really two Georgias. There's Atlanta and everywhere else. Well, I represent everywhere else, and South Georgia is very rural. And having broadband development down here is extremely important. So that's kind of the story of how I got here and how I got involved.
Well, you kind of took my next question right away from me, because I was going to ask you how the digital divide affects people down there, knowing that you have the beautiful city of Savannah, one of those beautiful cities in the country, and but also you have the rural areas as well. So you've seen firsthand how the distance, the effect between rural and urban is divided, and how the suburban areas and rural areas may not get the full brunt of the monies that are flowing now for broadband.
Well, you're exactly right, and that's important. Now, I acknowledge that there are some urban deserts and that they need to be addressed as well. But, you know, we saw this really come to a head, if you will, whenever we went through the pandemic, because, you know, a lot of the schools were closed, and a lot of the businesses were closed, and students were trying to learn online, and access to high-speed internet and to broadband was not necessarily available, particularly in the rural areas. And this was a big problem that we faced here. We also saw some good things happen. And by that, I would point specifically to the proliferation and the progress that we made in telehealth. Telehealth is now an integral part of our healthcare system. And of course, being a pharmacist and healthcare professional, that's very important to me. But we saw, as I say, I think there was a headline in the New York Times that said that we saw as much advance in a couple of weeks in telecommunications as we had in the last 10 years. And that's probably true, because it, as I say, has become an integral part of our healthcare system now. And that's the kind of thing we've got to address. And that's why I think that the broadband deployment is so vitally important.
I couldn't agree more, Congressman. I actually grew up in very rural upstate New York, dairy country, Columbia County, New York. And actually, you know, parts of even Maryland, where I live now, still don't have access to high-speed broadband. And I've been in those parts of Maryland. And when you're trying to raise a child or get a job and you don't have access to a good broadband connection, it really is limiting. It's just a fact. So again, really appreciate your leadership and the committee's focus on broadband connectivity. So let's talk about your bill, the American Broadband Deployment Act. You know, private sector is obviously investing a lot of money in broadband deployment. There are certain areas, though, where there's just no economic business case to build out broadband networks without some additional support, which led to the BEAD Act in the provision in the Infrastructure Act. So $42.5 billion in the pipeline right now, on top of other federal funding that was before that. But you focused very much on not just, you know, funding or what kind of technology gets deployed, but the fact that we need to have common sense, rational, predictable permitting rules. Why was that so important for you? Why was that an area you thought you needed to step in and address?
Well, it's obviously an important area in this sector, but I would submit to you that permitting and regulations are crushing almost every sector of our economy. You know, obviously the Energy and Commerce Committee, energy is a big part of what we do as well. Last year, I had the opportunity to go to Houston, Texas three times. And of course, you know, it's the energy capital of the world. And all three times I was there, it was the same theme. It was the same message that I was hearing from the from the companies, the energy companies down there, and that was that that permitting, that regulations are crushing us and crushing our economy. And it's true wherever you go. It's true through every sector. Healthcare, same thing. Regulations and it's just crushing us, whether it be healthcare, whether it be communications, whether it be energy. And that's why and I set out to really address that in the American Broadband Deployment Act, because, you know, we all understand that it's very important, as we've talked about already, to have access to broadband and to make sure it's out there. But the process is extremely important. You know, sometimes the permitting process, and not only at the federal level, but also at the state and local level, can there could be obstacles in there that are really problems. And that's why we wanted to address that. We tried to reform the cable franchising process, establishing timeframes. We refer to them sometimes as shot clocks, you know, that, you know, if you got a permit in and it just drags on and on and on, well, you know, there needs to be a time definite that this got to be done. And again, that's not only true at the federal level and the state level, but also at the local level. So all of these things, and as you described it, and I appreciate it, and I'd like to think that that is accurate, these are common sense solutions that we've offered here.
Yeah, Mike Saperstein, head of government affairs for WIA, had a chance to testify in support of your bill almost a year ago. And what he said was that the rule should be predictable, proportionate, and transparent. That seems reasonable and common sense to me. And he said, look, we're not saying there should be no rules. There should be a process that's predictable. And if the answer is no, tell us why. Let's have a conversation, right? I mean, this seems like fair request on behalf of industry. There's certainly a role for local government, but at the same time, we don't want to have, you know, administrative rules that don't necessarily make a difference in the outcome, but just slow down broadband, which everybody demands. So I really do appreciate you focusing on those issues. So the bill made it out of the Energy and Commerce Committee. It has not been taken up by the full House yet. How can industry best support your bill at this point in the process?
Well, that's a great question, and one that I appreciate you asking, because we do need industry support. We need, I always say that grassroots advocacy is extremely important. Keep in mind that ours is a citizen legislature. The United States House of Representatives, we have two pharmacists. I'm one of the pharmacists. We have a number of different doctors. We have, you know, we got farmers. We got new car salesmen. We got way too many lawyers. But, you know, my point is that we're a diverse group, and not everybody knows. You know, we might know a little bit about everything, but not a whole lot about anything. And that's why it's important for those people who do know a whole lot about this to advocate on our behalf and on behalf of this bill. Because if we're going to get this passed, it's going to take the advocacy and the lobbying, if you will, of interested parties.
Yeah. Well, we will certainly do what we can to help. What I like to try to remind folks is, you know, when you're walking around with your smartphone in your hand, watch, you know, doing Twitter or watching Netflix on your phone or whatever, it's a really amazing technology. But the only way that happened was because of a whole bunch of infrastructure that was deployed, right, to make that wireless connection possible. And so that may not seem like the most interesting thing in the world, but what people do think is really interesting is all the things that all that infrastructure enables. And so I think it's important for us to tell the story and really focus on how, if we don't address these things, we don't have predictable, proportionate, and transparent permitting, it actually negatively impacts consumers, whether it's telemedicine or online education or looking for a job or your own entertainment. So that's the story that we try to tell.
And that's a great story. And that's a story that needs to be told, because, as I say, you know, there are members of Congress who truthfully don't understand that. And you know, it's not because they're dumb or they can't learn. No, they're not exposed to it, and they just don't really understand that.
So you were a mayor in Pooler, Georgia, and then you were a member of the Georgia Assembly before that. How does your experience as a mayor, because presumably as a mayor, you might be on the other end of somebody coming in saying, you know what, I don't need this wireless stuff in my community, right? So how does your experience both at the local and state level as well inform how you think about this topic?
Well, that's a great question. And first of all, I was a mayor before I was in the state legislature. So, I tell you, we were a growing city. And I tell the story. I became mayor of the city of Pooler in 1996, and our population was 4,500. When I left in 2004, our population was 19,000. Now, you know, that's not a big number, but proportionally, when you grow 3-4 times your size. And not only that, but we went from 7.7 square miles to over 28 square miles in property and in acreage. And, you know, we had a lot of growth and we had broadband. That was a big part of what we were doing. We had a lot of obstacles that we had to overcome. And you know, utilities were part of that. The biggest obstacle had to do with water and sewer. I tell people all the time. When I was in pharmacy school, I never imagined I'd know as much about water sewer as I know, because, you know, most people, they turn on the water and it flows and they flush it and it goes away and that's all they know. But when you're mayor, you got to know. You got to know where that water's coming from. You got to know where that water's going and how it's going to be treated. Same thing goes with, you know, most people move into a neighborhood and the broadband's there or internet's there and they don't think anything of it. But when you're planning, and I was on planning and zoning for 4 years before I became a member of city council and then mayor. And when you're in the planning stages, you got to calculate that in and you got to figure that in and figure how those services are going to be rendered.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that process at the local level is really quite important for deployment of broadband and wireless communications in every community in the country. So I appreciate your knowledge on that and appreciate you continuing to focus on it. Switching gears for a second to another topic within BEAD, right, where all the states at this point have submitted their plans, including Georgia, for how they're going to allocate their spending. And so one question is, there's been some discussion around the benefits of fiber versus fixed wireless technology. You know, our position generally has been, you know, let the states decide what makes the most sense. If they have enough money to do fiber and that's what they want, great. But there probably be some areas where it might make sense to do a different technology, like a fixed wireless solution. What's your view on sort of the right balance and how states should be thinking about that?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think it is up to the local authorities. And I think that it's going to depend a lot on the makeup. Keep in mind, too, that, you know, I represent a coastal area that can present some challenges in itself. You know, we have, yes, we did have some densely populated areas, but we also have some areas that, you know, some islands that, particularly barrier islands, that aren't necessarily densely populated. You know, what serves best there? Is that, you know, is that fiber or is fixed wireless a smarter and obviously, you know, a more reasonable and more practical solution? So that's why it really does need to be up to the local authorities, and I think, to make that determination in conjunction with the advice from the experts as well.
All right. So let's switch gears for a second and talk about Congress more generally. So the House now has a one-member majority with some recent early departures. How has that affected the governing process? How do you see things playing out with that thin of a majority?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I'm getting asked by people, you know, are y'all going to come back in a majority next year? And I'm thinking to myself, what do you mean next year? Are we going to keep it this year? I mean, we have a majority of one. Yeah. And that's precarious. And, you know, I will tell you, it's been tough. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Now, look, this is my 10th year in Congress, my fifth term, and I'm excited every time I go back up there. The shine has not worn off for me, and that's very important. However, having said that, I will tell you that last October was tough. When we went through that with the change in the speaker, which I was adamantly opposed to, that was rough, and that was a rough time. And that's, you know, that's part of it. I get it, but I hope we don't go through that again. I don't think it served any useful purpose, and I disagree with it. You know, we got some big things coming up, and big things coming up here in the next couple of weeks. We got to decide what we're going to do on Ukraine, on Israel, on FISA. All of those things are extremely important, and We were able to get through the appropriations process. I was proud that we were able to do that. Now we go from the frying pan into the fire. You know, it's tough, but that's okay. That's why we're supposed to handle the tough ones.
Well, that's why we have a representative government and we elect leaders like you to handle these tough issues for us, right? How about on the communications front? I saw over the weekend, it looks like Chair McMorris Rodgers and Chair Cantwell in the Senate reached a deal on a data privacy bill, for example. So is that a positive sign for things to come in terms of potential, you know, cooperation on things like data privacy or spectrum or broadband affordability programs or anything else going forward?
I do think it is. And I'm very, very happy for Kathy and her success in being able to forge an agreement with the Senate on this. This is something that I have told her. I think this will be part of her legacy. We're going to really miss her. She's done an outstanding job as chair, but she's been working on this for years. And this has been something that's been extremely important to her and to all of us, really. And you know, obviously, we need to find a solution to it. And to think that we've gotten at least this agreement here, and if we can move it forward, and I hope we can, I think that that's going to get the ball rolling. And I think that it's going to help us with a number of different things that need to be addressed. I mean, let's face it. You know, we're still working under the premises of a law that was passed in 1997 dealing with the internet. I mean, think of what has changed since 1997. I don't want to stifle innovation, and I believe in freedom of speech. All of us do. But at the same time, we've got to get this under control. So that's why I'm very, very happy that to hear that they've reached an agreement on this. And I look forward to pushing this and getting it through the House and through the Senate and getting it signed into law.
Well, that is a very positive perspective, and I appreciate it. I hope we can do the same on spectrum, and I hope ultimately we can do the same on permitting and get your American Broadband Deployment Act over the finish line. I do think privacy is a good example. I mean, we have a form of government that purposefully made it hard to get legislation done, right? And it has to require a lot of work and hard work and cooperation among multiple parties. So we appreciate what you've already done in introducing the American Broadband Deployment Act. We'll keep pushing forward for its passage in the House and the Senate, and we will continue to work with you. So just want to thank you again for your time and for your leadership, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, and thank you for your advocacy. Listen, this is important, and let me encourage all your listeners. You have a vested interest in this, and your elected officials need to hear from you. And I hope that you'll call them and that you'll let them know just how important this is.
And Congressman, let me echo what Patrick said. In fact, I'll speak for him in this sense that we take some pride in the fact that broadband connectivity kind of crosses party lines, and it's a bipartisan issue. And we're proud and happy to give you guys something that you can do a little kumbaya on, which we all want to see more of. We all dearly miss those old days. So you're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Have a great day.
All right. Thank y'all.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.